You're listening to Stories About People. This story is called The Story of Alf by Chris Ward. The chill autumn air was cut through like a knife by the shrill beeping of an alarm. In large, unfriendly red digits, the alarm read 0600. A hand slowly reaches out to end its masochism and retreats back under the covers. Slowly, the cold air of the room is warmed by a heating system perfectly timed to turn on half an hour ago. Just enough time to make getting out of bed bearable, but not too long to reinduce sleep through coziness. A face emerges from the covers and yawns. It is a male face. Not attractive, not unattractive, but somewhere perfectly in between, as average could be if average were not so generic and hard to define. Attached to the face is a figure resplendent in a gray singlet and boxers. It pulls back the sheets and emerges from the bed. It stands next to the bed and stretches for precisely 30 seconds, no more and no less. It then undertakes 30 star jumps, no more and no less. Finally, it drops to the floor and huffs and puffs its way through 29 push-ups, pauses for breath, and completes one more, no more and no less. Any less would be unhealthy. Any more would be pure unnecessary indulgence. The figure moves in the direction of a small bathroom, where it shaves for precisely 5 minutes, showers for 4, and returns to the bedroom to dress pretty much in what it dressed in yesterday. Black shoes, gray suit, white shirt, and one point of frivolity, a red tie. Anything different would be time wasted on indecision.
This is Alf. Alf is exceedingly average. Average height, average build, average intelligence. His features are average. His hands and penis are typical size. His feet are slightly below standard, but he doesn't like to mention it, and that is a whole other story. Alf lives in the middle of the country, earns an average income, and when he finds the average woman, will have an average-sized family and move from his average-sized bachelor dwelling to an average-sized family house with room for a garden and just enough cars to suit their purpose. He has precisely 30 minutes remaining to eat breakfast, watch the news, and catch the bus he always catches to work, which somehow is always on time, to arrive with 10 minutes to spare. This allows just enough time for his one guilty pleasure. A steaming cup of tea in his favorite mug that is always just right.
Alf has a desk job. He assists the movement of pieces of paper that make people above and below him happy, or at least satisfied. He takes the breaks allocated to him. No more and no less. It would be plain rude to do otherwise. For lunch, he takes precisely half an hour, which is just enough time to get an exceedingly average sandwich from the especially average bistro and to have a snappy 10-minute stroll around the park. Then back to helping lost pieces of paper find their rightful home with other pieces of paper, intersected by one final cup of tea at exactly 3 p.m. After an average day of paper relocation, very occasionally, a group of like-average minds might get together to undertake the seemingly epic 10-minute journey to the local exceptionally average pub for a few lukewarm pints. But really, that happens so rarely, it's hardly worth mentioning. Alf likes to go to the gym 3 times a week. There, he does exactly the exercise routine allocated to him and returns to his dwelling, satisfied with a job done okay. He watches an hour or so of primetime, mainstream TV, and retires to bed at a reasonable time, resolved in the knowledge that tomorrow will also go according to plan, started by a room warmed just right and alarm that goes off at just the right time.
This has been the story of Alf's life for as long as he remembers, which he doesn't. It's been 10 years. Every day of every week of every month of every year of one decade following a well-defined path and routine. Alf likes it this way. At least he thinks he does. There are rare moments he stops to think and question who he is and where he's going. The last time he had one of those moments was during a tea break 3 years ago. The brief 30 seconds disturbed him so much. He vowed never to have such a moment again. Tonight was set to change all this and be the moment where Alf's perfectly planned little life got turned upside down on its averagely barbered head.
For tonight, Alf will have a dream. This was not unusual, per se. Alf usually had dreams. He typically dreamt happy dreams, such as his sports team winning a competition, his department winning an award for best paper shufflers of the month. Or, once a week, he had his favorite dream where he met Mrs. Alf and they lived happily ever after. Once a month, aforementioned potential Mrs. Alf might do some more things in his dream, and Alf would wake up with the curious inkling of a smile on his face. Tonight, he had a different dream. Tonight, Alf dreamt about the end of the world. He dreamt vividly of a particular person, a particular time, a particular location, and a particular occurrence. It was very peculiar. Alf awoke the next morning feeling ever so slightly vexed. He turned off his alarm a minute later than usual, took a minute longer to get out of bed, and had to run to catch his bus on time. This had never happened before. All day, Alf was not quite himself, rather 95% Alf. No one seemed to notice. That night, he visited the gym, but put in slightly less effort than he was expected to, and got home slightly earlier. He was not as obligatory polite to his next-door neighbor as they passed on the stairwell, and he felt ever so slightly perturbed as he watched his favorite average show about a bunch of mismatched people who were destined never to get along, competing to win something or other that everyone had forgotten about anyway. That night, he had the same dream. Exactly the same, identical in every detail, second for second, moment for moment. Over the next week, this happened every night. Alf gradually became increasingly disoriented, culminating on Friday, when, awakening 5 minutes late, for the first time Alf missed his bus and had to wait 20 minutes for the next one. He was 10 minutes late for work and blustered in with a plethora of prepared excuses. No one had even noticed his absence.
On Saturday morning, after a decadent 10-minute lie-in, Alf sat down to his favorite Saturday morning pastime of reading the nation's most popular newspaper whilst listening to the nation's favorite radio station. He nearly choked on his toast and tea when staring out at him from page 11 was the face of the very person who had been haunting his dreams for the past week. He cut out the clipping and stuck it to the wall. That afternoon, he visited the local library and consulted other less popular newspapers to find out more about this individual, photocopying all that he found. He then used the ever-so-handy internet access at the library to find out more, discovering this person's occupation, place of work, and address. Disturbingly to poor Alf, they all matched those in his dream precisely.
Saturday night, he met his brother, and they went to the cinema together, followed by very average pizza and a national chain that was patronized purely by default. Alf apologized to his brother for being off color. Do you know what his brother's response was?
I hadn't noticed.
On Sunday, Alf went for a good long walk around the park to clear his head. He found solace in watching all the average couples with their average families feeding the ducks in the standard-sized municipal pond. This reassured him momentarily until he returned home to his piles of paper cuttings and printouts and sat staring at them, completely perplexed and uncertain for the first time in his life.
That night, his dream changed. It got longer. It was the same scene from the week before, but with a new scene prepended. This time, Alf saw the person leaving their home and traveling towards the end of the world. Again, the dream was in complete clarity. On Monday, Alf wasn't even awoken by his alarm. He awoke 30 minutes late and didn't have time for his morning exercise routine. He cut himself shaving, spilt his tea, and burnt his toast. He missed his usual bus and the one after, arriving at work nearly an hour late. He flustered into work, a bumbling, busting bag of nerves, offering excuses to his fellow paper shufflers. No one had noticed.
After a week of this dream and Alf spending day after day getting to work progressively later and undertaking less and less work with seemingly no one noticing, he did something drastic. On Saturday, he gathered a few meager possessions into a bag, waved goodbye to his neighbor, and headed towards the train station. He bought a one-way ticket to his destination and watched the countryside whiz by as he headed to the big city. During the train journey, he sat opposite an enigmatic-looking bearded man of nondescript ethnic background. Between moments of fitful dozing and browsing the train company Free magazine, where he read fascinating articles about fascinating people from places he had never heard of, he noticed the man was constantly looking at him. This was odd for two reasons. Firstly, the man always wore a knowing smile. Secondly, Alf never got any attention or second looks from anyone, and this attention was so unusual, he didn't completely know how to handle it. Arriving late in the evening, he checked into his affordable but average hotel and planned the rest of his trip. By this point, Alf was looking a little worse for wear. He hadn't shaved in a week and had run out of clean, identical clothing. If he were at home, a few heads would now be turning in his direction. However, in the big city, he was as average as ever and slipped right into the background as he found his way around bustling streets and public transport to his destination. Pushing through crowds, dodging meandering tourists, avoiding beggars and buskers, Alf never lost focus of where he needed to be, where he was going, and what he needed to do. He was going to save the world.
The next day, we find Alf lurking on the intersection of two streets that face the offices of Acme Incorporated. It had started to drizzle, so he had sought refuge in the doorway of a recently closed cupcake shop. Opposite was a donut shop doing a roaring trade. He peeked out from under the baseball cap he had thankfully remembered to pack and watched workers returning from lunch break, some dashing from the wet and others dragging their feet. He watched several groups chatting and smoking across the street and enter the security gates, the barrier rising and beeping as they swiped their laminated security passes. Then, most fortunately for Alf, came a figure that was familiar. Despite the nights he had grown to know the appearance of this individual, the stark exactness of detail was a surprising shock. It flustered Alf, and despite his pressing and urgent task, the speech he had prepared and repeated time after time to learn emerged as a series of blustered, flustered words. The figure crossed the road, swiped, beeped, and entered Acme Incorporated. Alf stared at his feet, disappointed in his inaction. The world was relying on him, and he had just blathered. He walked around the block twice, trying to build his confidence, getting progressively wetter and more bedraggled in the process. He was ready. He walked up to the security guard on duty. Excuse me?
Yes, said the completely uninterested guard, not looking up from filling in the letters E, A, O, G, D, and B in his newspaper.
I need to speak to Dr. Cheryl Fisher as a matter of urgency, stated Alf in the most decisive and confident tone he could muster.
Do you have an appointment? Retorted the guard, who had now moved to drawing mustaches on people's photos.
No, but it's of the utmost importance that I see them right now. I have something...
Do you know how many nut jobs we get every day trying that line? Interrupted the guard, lifting his head from his work and staring at Alf with tired, bored eyes.
Now, look here. Are you implying that I'm unhinged or unstable? Alf, getting annoyed, uncharacteristically raised his voice.
The guard looked Alf up and down with a demeaning, patronizing, and lingering look. Not at all, sir, he said, rather unconvincingly. I'm just saying that Dr. Fisher gets a lot of individuals wishing to converse. Some are welcome, and others, at this point the guard looked Alf square in the face, aren't, sir.
Alf reached far into his reserve of confidence to figure out his next move. This had been unexpected. He had naively thought that this part would be easy. Fine, well, I won't leave until Dr. Fisher agrees to see me, said Alf in the most convincing voice he could muster.
If that's what makes you happy, sir, we'll see who gets bored first, said the guard, returning to his newspaper, to begin the ever-so-important task of drawing glasses on blondes. I gather there's a very good doorway over there, he gestured nonchalantly in the direction of Alf's previous sodden solace.
Alf lingered in the doorway, with the security guard occasionally waving in his direction. To pass the time, he counted bricks, made images out of clouds, and played the number plate game. He was especially proud of what he made from SBA, AGE, and WVT. 5 p.m. came and staff started pouring out of Acme Incorporated. Alf kept a keen eye on the crowds for Dr. Fisher and finally saw her emerging and heading towards the car park. Alf left his doorway and ran frantically after her, his sodden shoes squelching as he ran. Dr. Fisher,
I
need to talk to you urgently. I know this is going to sound crazy, but...
Dr. Fisher slammed their car door and wound down the window, looking rather keen to escape from this bedraggled figure. Sorry, I have a dinner engagement. Please make an appointment with my secretary. And with that, drove off.
But how... Who sputtered Alf? Far too late. Alf turned back to his doorway, downtrodden and damp but still determined. He paused to catch his breath and began the long walk to Dr. Fisher's house.
Hours later, and after a rather satisfying and filling meal where she probably drank just a little too much wine to be driving, Dr. Fisher was returning home. She turned the corner into her quiet suburban street and approached her luxurious home, contemplating a warm bath and a good cup of tea. As she approached the driveway, nestled amongst her two favorite garden gnomes, she thought she saw a figure crouching between them. Dr. Fisher stopped the car, looked for something that could conceivably be used as a weapon, settled on a rather large textbook, and precariously got out of the car, weighing the book in her hands as she did. "Hello? Who's there?" she demanded as confidently as she could muster.
The figure stood and stepped towards her. It didn't look aggressive, but it didn't look savory. "Dr. Fisher, I really need to talk to you. I know it's all going to sound crazy, but you've been in my dreams." Alf suddenly realized that this didn't sound quite as positive as he had hoped.
Taken aback by this statement and unsure quite how to take it, Dr. Fisher attempted to circumvent this disheveled stranger. "Now, look, I don't care what you think you know or want, but I want you off my property now, before I call the police." She managed to get to her front door surprisingly easily. This character seemed rather dim-witted for a burglar, kidnapper, murderer, activist, whatever.
But Dr. Fisher, please, it's about the end of the world," sputtered Alf, again realizing the lack of gravitas in what he was saying.
Dr. Fisher was momentarily struck by a shiver down her spine, for a split second thinking of entertaining the notions being speculated. She then thought better, slammed the front door and kept an eye through the front window until the figure had slunk off of the property.
The next day, and one closer to Alf's impending and final deadline, he was back lurking nearby Acme Incorporated, this time on an upturned crate, 50 meters from the main entrance, as his previous doorway was now being redeveloped into a cafe that sold nothing but toast. It was 8:30, and people were starting to trickle in for work. Alf had no new ideas, so attempted the same strategy as before. He attempted to wave down Dr. Fisher as she arrived and was spectacularly unsuccessful, nearly getting run over in the process. Again that evening, he was lurking in Dr. Fisher's front garden as she returned from an unsatisfactory date. Having decided that this eccentric figure was no real threat and looked appropriate nestled amongst her garden gnomes, she tossed him a chocolate bar and entered her house before Alf even had a chance to rouse himself from napping and say anything of any consequence. Alf needed a new strategy.
Spending the night shivering in Cheryl Fisher's garden, he decided to be as forthright as he could muster, and as Dr. Fisher emerged to begin her morning commute, she found Alf lying in front of her car, refusing to move until she listened to what he had to say. Unfortunately for Alf, today she had meetings elsewhere in town and was instead catching public transport.
Several hours later, Alf was again outside Acme Incorporated with hand-painted placards proclaiming that the company and Dr. Fisher were bringing about the end of the world. He thrust them in the face of workers, handed out flyers, shouted slogans, and showed as much conviction as emotion as he could muster. His flyers were ignored and thrown away. His placards got soggy, and the text became an unreadable mess. Those who paid any attention laughed at his increasingly ridiculous look. It was a disastrous and failed day, and even Alf was exhausting his supply of drive and devotion to the cause. The next day, and one closer to the inevitable end, Alf had no enthusiasm and instead dejectedly sat in the doorway of the now-closed donut shop. Some threw coins at him, some threw a cursory glance whilst muttering, "It shouldn't be allowed," to their friends, but he was generally ignored. An outcast, a figure in the background fabric of your normal existence that requires and deserves no attention. He had failed. He had given up. He no longer cared what happened. He had nothing to lose and nothing to gain and no sympathy left for a world that had ignored him most of his life.
For the next few days, Alf sat in the same doorway as copper and silver coins gathered around him. He smelled. He no longer slept or ate. He muttered random phrases about apocalypses and visions, increasing the wide berth that was already formed around him. In a matter of weeks, he had transformed from a simple man with a simple life into a broken figure with a heartfelt mission that no one would listen to.
In a final moment of sudden clarity, Alf checked his watch and noticed it was 10 minutes before the end of the world. He spent his remaining moments wondering if he was right and what he would do with his life if his visions proved to be wrong. He would throw caution to the wind, learn new skills, change his life into a dynamic existence where he accomplished things and did what he wanted, not what was expected.
Sadly for Alf and everyone else who might have benefited from paying attention to him, the world ended.
This story is called The Hurricane by Susie Karlik and Melisande Karlik-Glushkov. There was this hurricane.
At first, we thought it was just an unseasonably heavy rain because it was December, almost Christmas, and the rain was slashing the sky in angry silver streaks, almost like claw marks. We stood on the front porch, the rain slamming into the street, the cars, the trees, the ground, the side of our house, the side of the porch. And we thought, that's a lot of rain for December.
Timmy, the neighbor kid, pushed against that slashing rain on his stupid bike, the bike's red frame and Timmy's black hair moving in the opposite direction of that driving rain. Rain so dense we couldn't even see Timmy's legs or his drenched t-shirt plastered to his torso or his hands so wet they could barely grip the handlebars of that bike of his. The rain almost washed Timmy out.
Hurricane! Timmy yelled, but we ignored him, as we always did. He was just a dumb kid on a dumb bike. Nobody ever believed him. It was just a lot of rain. We went back in the house when we heard the phone ring.
My Aunt Rosa picked it up. Hello? She asked, who is this? There was a woman's voice on the other end of the phone. She sounded muffled, and we couldn't quite make out what she was saying.
Hello? Hello? Who is this, please? Aunt Rosa insisted into the phone, but the voice was still too muffled to understand anything.
I guess it's the storm interfering with the phone lines, Aunt Rosa shrugged, and hung up the phone. As soon as the receiver clicked back into place, the entire phone flew off the wall, pushed by a wind that forced its way into the kitchen through the now gaping hole in the wall where the phone had just been. Unfortunately, Aunt Rosa hadn't seen it coming and was struck in the back of the head. She dropped to the floor, instantly knocked out.
We almost didn't even notice if the dog hadn't yelped when she dropped. Grab her arms, I ordered my brother. Let's get her onto the couch.
No, not the couch, my brother shouted over the wind, ducking out of the way of the tea kettle flying through the air. The wind coming in through the wall was swirling around the kitchen like a bird trapped in the house, desperately looking for a way out and disturbing everything that wasn't nailed down. Hurling it through the air in a growing cyclone cloud made up of pots and pans, the decorative plates Aunt Rosa used to collect, pieces of motivational posters our mum had tacked onto the walls, oven mitts, dish towels, and a collection of wishbones we had been saving up over 20 years of chicken soup and chicken dinners and the yearly Thanksgiving turkey.
Put her in the bathtub so she's not directly underneath a window, my brother screamed. We hauled her body up the stairs to the bathroom and gingerly laid her down in the old clawfoot tub. Go run downstairs and get some pillows from the living room, my mom commanded as she nudged me out of the bathroom.
I quickly spun down the stairs and leaped off the landing, falling with a hard thud on the wooden floor. But as I strode into the living room, I noticed something strange. On the floor beneath me, there lay a thin layer of water. strange, he thought. I followed the trail of murky water through the kitchen, the pantry, and the dining room. But I stopped when I got to the front door. Miniature waterfalls were spewing from the crevices of the door. Our house was flooding.
The water was rising steadily. Even our thick carpet, so long that 2 inches of pile between bare feet, living room acrobats, and the occasional knock of the lamp, and the cold hard floor. Not thick enough this time to sponge up the water coming in the door. I grabbed 2 throw pillows off the sofa, glancing at the weather outside through the large picture window just above it. The street was calm. The wind and slanting rain died down, the sidewalk that ran in front of our house completely dry. Timmy, the neighbor kid, rode by on his dumb bike, his shaggy black hair flowing behind him, his t-shirt puffing up with the wind he was generating himself. Sunny day, he yelled.
And it was on the street, in the front yard. Even as far as the edge of our front porch, but just in front of our front door and banging at all the windows was a wind and rain that was determined to get inside our house. Like it was just looking for a home to shelter in from itself.
The wind in the kitchen had already found its way into the dining room. I could hear the rattle of the porcelain figures Aunt Liza collected and kept safe in a big old glass front cabinet. The decorative plates my mom had fixed to the wall were crashing on the ground in 2s and 3s, the wind picking up the glass shards and adding them to the swirling mass of stuff whipping through the air. It was only a matter of time before it got into me.
I waded through the water, now at least 2 feet deep, and made it to the stairs. I got out just as the whirling wind from the dining room snaked into the living room, whipping up the water on the floor like a washing machine without a lid. White caps appearing around the top of the table and gathering by my dad's favorite chair.
I slammed back into the upstairs bathroom and shoved the pillows into my mom's hands. The storm is heading this way, I panted.
Just then, Aunt Rosa opened her eyes and sat up straight in the tub. Where's the phone? I have to get to a phone. I have to call them. I have to let them know. And then, just as suddenly, she fell back, unconscious again.
Oh, dear, my mother said with a worried look on her face. She could hear the wind slapping against the windows, trying to break them open to get inside. The glass on the windows was not very thick, and they wouldn't keep the storm out for long.
An idea popped into my head. 2 summers ago, my Aunt Shirley visited us from Philadelphia. Aunt Shirley ran a lumber mill a few hours west of Philly in the forested part of the state. She was Aunt Rosa's twin, and the two of them practiced the belief that one should never arrive at someone's house empty-handed, like it was a religion.
But while Aunt Rosa usually showed up as a guest with more homey things, like baked Alaska, or homemade cloudberry-infused vodka, or a chilled jar of mucusy gel scraped from the aloe plant she cultivated for their healing properties, Aunt Shirley defined being a guest as something closer to practical survival. She tended to show up at our house for her annual visits with an interesting assortment of things. Our favorite so far had been several sets of parachutes she had picked up at a closeout sale from an Army-Navy store specializing in vintage battlefield recoveries.
This was the only real difference between them. Otherwise, you couldn't tell them apart.
Last summer, things had been busy at the mill, and she hadn't had time to do any proper shopping before her holiday at our house, so she had just brought some wood with her. She built a nice tool shed in our backyard. She said that next summer, she would build a nice big treehouse for me and my brother, and left a pile of unused wood in the shed to come back to. Unfortunately, she broke her hip over the winter holidays, and since she was in no condition to build anything, those nice planks of wood were still sitting there in her shed.
We need to board up the windows, like they do in the movies, I shouted. The rattling in the house was getting louder, the wind banging the picture frames that led up the stairs. It wouldn't be long before it filled the second floor of the house, too.
My mom frowned. We don't have any wood, sweetie. If we did, your dad would have used it all up by now, she said. Our dad liked to build stuff, too, although usually it was just benches he donated anonymously to bird sanctuaries. Aunt Shirley and Aunt Rosa were Dad's sisters. Baking and building and all the hands-on practical stuff came from his side of the family. Mom's side was all about motivation.
No, the special wood that Aunt Shirley bought. Remember? The really sturdy kind. I yelled, the hope in my voice naturally increasing my volume over the raging wind.
have to call Shirley. Tell her not to come, Aunt Rosa blurted out, her eyes still closed.
If you board up the windows on the outside, how will the inside wind get out? My brother shouted back at me.
He had a point. He has a point, sweetie, said my mom. Well, then, what should we do? I asked. Let's wait until your father gets home, Mom decided. He's always full of good ideas.
It runs in the family, shouted Aunt Rosa from the bathtub before slipping back into unconsciousness again.
The wind filled the second floor hall now, opening and slamming all the bedroom doors, playing hide-and-seek with itself. I peered out the bathroom door. Towels and bedsheets flew out of the linen closet and danced in the air like frantic ghosts.
The water was halfway up the stairs. Our matching living room set bobbed on the waves. Dad's favorite armchair was caught in a small whirlpool, spinning and spinning over by the bookshelves. The chaise-longue rode a current over to the stairs and got wedged between the wall and the banister in a sudden swell. There was no way out.
I shut the bathroom door. What if we open all the windows?
Then the outside winds will get in, my brother pointed out. But that was actually the point.
That's actually my point, I said. If the outside winds try to get in and the inside winds try to get out, it will create a convergence and the hurricane will die out, like they say on the news.
When did you become such a weather expert, sweetie? Wondered Mum. But there was no time to answer her, although the answer was from watching weather reports on the news.
It's true that the hurricane will rapidly die out, but it will unleash winds of up to 125 miles per hour as it does. My brother watched the weather reports with me.
Then let's give it some place to go. Let's open the attic crawl space.
My brother had already come to the same conclusion and was pulling the shower curtain rod off the wall as I spoke, because we'd never be able to hold the ladder steady and push open the wooden trap into the attic on our own.
The shower curtain fluttered down onto Aunt Rosa, lying in the tub, covering her body like a tent. One part got stuck on the shower keg and never made landfall.
My brother, armed with the shower rod, stood behind me, as ready to rush the wind as I was. Shut the door behind me, Ma! He screamed as I headed out into the hall. We barely caught her, all right, sweetie, over the wind.
In the hall, the wind almost picked me up and flew me to the other end. It held onto door handles as I pulled myself down the hall to the window. My brother was immediately lost in a queen-sized fitted sheet, struggling blindly in the direction where he knew the crawlspace door to be.
He banged around on the ceiling a few times with the shower rod, poking the bedsheet in the hopes of landing on the right spot.
A little more to the left, I shouted, almost at the window. Our timing had to be perfect. Me opening the window, my brother opening the crawlspace trap so the released wind would have someplace to go. He poked around a bit more, and then I saw the ceiling move. He had found it.
You got it! Stay right where you are! My brother froze, ready to send the shower curtain rod up in one mighty thrust on my count of 1, 2, 3!
I shoved the window pane up and hung on, watching my brother poke the shower curtain rod up into the ceiling so hard the trapdoor banged away, exposing a black square that led into the attic space. There was a millisecond of silence. All was still. The bedsheets and towels hung frozen in the air, my brother pressed against the wall, me clinging to the windowsill.
The inside wind rushed down the hall to the window as if by suction, while the outside wind pushed in with the force of, well, a hurricane. The two forces met exactly where the pane of glass had been and then suddenly stopped. My brother slammed himself into his own room, safe behind the closed door.
A mighty, whooshing, rushing cool wind was unleashed, swept through the hall to the open crawl space. I was still clinging to the windowsill, but the bathroom door was wide open, and as the wind swooshed up into the attic, it sucked everything with it. The towels, the bed linen, the framed family photos, the bath mat, the shower curtain, and the entire bathtub with Aunt Rosa in it. Everything sucked up through the black square into the ceiling, filling the entire empty space with itself, the convergence of air and release of winds, pulling up the condensation from the rising waters of the living room and turning into one massive cloud in the attic.
The living room waters receded, our furnishings and decor settling in a heap on the wet first floor. My brother stepped gingerly out of his room, and together we peeked into the bathroom. Our mom had wedged herself behind the toilet. It took some pulling to get her out, but we finally did. There was a gaping hole where the tub had been.
A soft rain fell from the crawl space, tendrils of fog snaking down and dissipating in the still air. Outside, we could hear birds chirping, and the neighbor kid Timmy ringing the bell on his bright red bike. We heard my dad's car pull into the driveway, and the motor of the automatic garage door opening wide to let him in. Recorded and produced in Berlin. Find out more at storiesaboutpeople.site.